It was 2004, and I married the most beautiful woman ever. And so, guys, I'm going to apologize. I won. My wife is the most beautiful woman ever. And so as we were going through the whole engagement period and wedding planning, I chose to not get involved, which was probably for the sake of our marriage in the long haul. And so quite frankly, I don't know what good I would have been. Yeah, sure, I like that color. Yep, I like that invitation style. So I just chose to back off. And I said, honey, instead of allowing me to help you with all the wedding plans, I'm going to take care of the honeymoon. I will plan the honeymoon, right? And so I did that, and I wanted it to be the surprise. And so I'm a Minnesota boy, so I didn't know much about the South. But we have stereotypes of the South, and one of those stereotypes, I'm not going to go into it, you can fill in the blank, was of Tennessee. And so Tennessee, they wear the wrong color orange, right? Come on. Come on, like, aren't you proud of me? I'm trying. Like, okay, like that was just slipped right in right there. No. So I love cabins, I love the nature, and I love, you know, mountains and the woods and all this kind of stuff, and it's winter, so I was like, it'd be great just to get out. We got married in December, I was like, it'd be great just to get out and go down. So I rented this cabin in Pigeon Forge, right? Right there, see? That's exactly, nobody told me that that would be the response you would get when you go to Pigeon Forge. Think Dollywood, okay? I mean, it's just like, I didn't know that. And so I got this cabin, it was a big surprise, and we go down there. And one of the things that I didn't know was gonna happen to me when I got married was there's gonna be this protective instinct that would just kick in overdrive. I had no idea that was latent inside of me. So we go down to Tennessee, my stereotypes are already full blown, we're in the woods, in the cabins, and I immediately think that Tennessee is just full of people named Billy Bob. You know what I'm saying? Right? And so I'm afraid. I don't know what's out there. I don't trust them. And so now we're in this cabin, in the mountain, in the woods, foreign place, and now it's nighttime. And so we go to bed, and I'm paranoid. I'm starting to actually kind of get a little bit scared, and I'm acting all cool because I don't want my wife to think I'm a big wuss, right? And so she falls asleep, and I'm pretending that I'm asleep, but actually what I'm doing is I'm freaking out, and I'm praying. I'm like, Lord, peace, please, peace, help. You know, keep us from all the Tennessee evil people and all this kind of stuff. And so what ended up happening was this windstorm started to come in. And so it just like rushed down the mountains and it hit our cabin and the cabin just started to shake and there was noises like I never heard before and branches were just scraping against the side. And I'm like, oh Lord, peace be still. You know, like I'm like, help. And so here, this is so embarrassing. I cannot believe I'm telling you this. This is what I did. I went into the living room. Even though I locked the door, I barricaded the door. And that wasn't it. Then I set up like cups and glasses and other things on the other side just in case they got through the door and they walked in. If they knocked over a cup, I would hear them. And I barricaded the door into our bedroom. And like I was like so nervous. And I'm like seriously panicking. And I felt really pathetic. And so I had to make sure I got up extra early because I didn't want my wife to see what I did. Right? So I'm thinking about all of this, and I was like, gosh, why did I do that? Why did I feel that need to be so protective? It's because the reality is we protect what we value most. That was my first night, like with my bride, like not my first night, like second or third night. Like I wanted to protect her. I treasure her. I value her. I was like, you're not coming in here. You're not gonna take what I love. Like, and so we protect what we value most. And that's why we have things like doors and gates and alarm systems, because we wanna keep what's out there and protect what's on the other side. And that's why we have those things, right? Like doors are meant to create a separation. A distinction. It's a threshold, right? It's a transition piece. And I was like, man, Jesus describes himself as the door. Do we think of him that way? You know, we've been asking that question every Sunday in the series, like, who do you say that Jesus is? If you say that he's a door, how does that affect your life? We need to think about this because when we read John chapter 10, there's a few things that happen, right? This is the passage where Jesus has two I am statements. I am the door and I am the good shepherd. We quickly go through the I am the door part and just attach ourselves to the good shepherd part. Because they're like Psalm 23. We get Psalm 23, right? The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He's a good shepherd. He's going to make me lie down beside green pastures, by the still waters. And we understand the good shepherd. But what about the door? Jesus describes himself as the door, as the gate, a symbol of protection, a symbol of access, of coming in and going out. And so we got to see how these two metaphors play off of each other, because in John 10, these two metaphors are really kind of one and the same, and they're absolutely beautiful. So next Sunday, we're going to talk about I'm the good shepherd, and you might go, well, there's some redundancy here. That's okay. It's meant to be a little redundant so that we can understand the beauty of what Jesus is trying to communicate here, okay? And when Jesus says, I am the door, I am the gate, we see this in this text, okay? Look at verse 1-3. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. Now that's one of those duh verses, right? If you don't come in by the door and you got in a different way, obviously you have bad intentions in what you're trying to do, right? If someone were to break into your house, if your door is unlocked, shame on you. But if they don't, they break through a window or something, they get in and they're not welcome. They're thieves, they're robbers, they're strangers, they're wolves. Right? And so with that, he's trying to give us a comparison, right? I am the door, all else are thieves and robbers. And he's trying to help us understand the difference between his heart and his intentions and why he came and all other intentions of the world and what they're trying to do. And in this context, if you remember last week when Jesus said, I'm the light of the world, he said that in the temple to create this distinction between how people who think that religion and their systems of getting their way to God and doing good and trying to be good enough is the light. He's trying to create that distinction saying, no, 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 no. They're actually blind guides. They're in the darkness. I am the light. So Jesus here is basically saying the old religious system are thieves and robbers, but we can expand that a little bit further. So who are these thieves and these robbers and the strangers and the wolves that are trying to get in and rob the sheep and lead the sheep astray? The Bible tells us in Ephesians that flesh and blood aren't our enemies. The war is not against flesh and blood, but against the powers and principalities, the darkness, the evil, Satan. Satan has influenced people, blinded the eyes of people in their hearts. And so they distort what God intends for good and try to get people to be led astray. And so we can easily say that anything else apart from the gospel of Jesus Christ can be considered thieves, robbers, strangers, and wolves. And so within that, we got to see the beauty in the love of Jesus and what he's trying to say. He's like, listen, I want you so badly to understand my heart, my Father's heart, why we're here. We're not here to judge. We're here to show you that everything else in this world that's saying you can find fulfillment, peace with God, you got to do this, you got to be good enough, you got to do the system, you got to pray this prayer and all this kind of stuff, all of those things will not lead to what you're looking for. There's only one way, and it's me. I am the door. I am the good shepherd. They are coming to steal, kill, and destroy, but I've come to have life. We got to see that on the outset of what Jesus is trying to say. And he uses sheep and shepherding, and this caught their attention because in Israel, this was common. You could see this everywhere. Even today, if you ever go to Israel, you would see sheep and shepherds everywhere. It's normal. They totally understood it. Sheep were a commodity. They were used for sacrifices within the temple, but it was also an economic thing. It was for clothing and food and all this kind of stuff. And shepherding was not a desirable job. It was a horrible job. You don't wake up one day as a kid and go, I think I'm going to be a shepherd. That's what I want to do. It just, that's not normative. To be a shepherd means You're outside alone, braving the elements. It's hot there. And oftentimes it could have these crazy windstorms and rainstorms, and you're in the elements. You're fighting off wolves, and you're trying desperately to find good pasture for your sheep. And the terrain is really rough in the Judean wilderness. You've got rocks and cliffs and crevices and all these things. And sheep are not the most brilliant creature in the world. Like, they have this instinctive desire to wander away. And so, like, the shepherd is constantly looking for the sheep that wander away, and he's trying to keep them all together. A Jewish historian says that at night, you would find a shepherd coming back to the fold, sleepless, weather-beaten, and leaning on his staff, and his job isn't even done yet. It was a miserable job. They were marginalized. And so you would see two different types of sheepfolds, or two different types of pens. One would be in a village, which was a communal sheepfold, which multiple shepherds would share with their own sheep. And then there was the ones in the wilderness, if they were out there for an extended period of time trying to find the pasture for their flock. And in the communal sheepfolds in the villages, the shepherds would come in, bring their sheep in, and then they would hire a gatekeeper or a porter to watch the sheep at night, and then the shepherds would actually go rest and come back in the morning, and they would come in, and the gatekeeper wouldn't allow the shepherd in unless there was recognition, and the shepherd would come and speak to his flock. Sometimes the shepherd would sing to his flock or call out their names one by one. Come here, Fluffy, Curly, Stinky. It's like the names of my kids. No, I'm just kidding. Like he calls them out. I don't know where that came from. He calls them out. And sometimes those sheep, they immediately come, but sometimes they're stubborn, even though they recognize the shepherd's voice. And if you look at verse 4, Jesus actually says here that he has to bring out all his own. And the Greek is ekbalo, which gives this idea that he has to come behind and kind of sometimes push the sheep out, even though they recognize his voice. I'm like, that's kind of fitting. Because, like, sometimes, like, even in my walk with Jesus, I recognize his voice, but yet I don't want to come out. You know what I'm saying? Like, hey, you should probably ask for forgiveness. I don't want to do that. Hey, you should probably not spend that money there. You probably got better, but I really want it, and I deserve it. Hey, maybe I should, I don't want to confess that sin. Right? We get that. We're sometimes reluctant to follow our shepherd's voice out of the pen. It's a beautiful imagery. Beautiful. I want to challenge you this morning that maybe, just maybe, you're going to hear the shepherd's voice. Maybe, just maybe, you're going to hear it. Maybe for the first time. And he's going to say, hey, come. Come. I got life. Maybe you're wandering. And he's going to say, hey, come on out. And I'm telling you, as your shepherd, he's going to be zealous for you. He's going to keep coming after you. He's going to keep wooing you. He's going to look for you. He'll leave the 99 and go after that one, because that's the heart of God. Nothing else in this world is anything close to that. And he gives this illustration about all the shepherding. Sheep have this amazing ability to memorize the frequency of their shepherd's voice. So when shepherd A comes, and there's like different flocks in there, only the flock of shepherd A would understand his frequency. And if there was a stranger doing it, they would ignore it. I think that's a beautiful image of saying we have the opportunity to intimately hear our Father's voice. Like, it's almost like a promise. My sheep will hear my voice, and they will not recognize a stranger's voice. That's a beautiful promise that we have. And of course, in verse 6, we see that they don't get it. They're like, what? Jesus, we get shepherds, we get shepherding, we get sheep, we get the folds. What does this have to do with you or anything? And Jesus, in his grace, he explains it. Look at verse 7. Truly, truly, like, this is really important. Listen up. I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep didn't listen to them. I am the door. And if anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. I am the door. He says it twice. I am the door. And immediately we think of doors, right? How many doors we have here? We got a whole bunch of doors. We think of gates. We visualize it. We understand it. But you got to understand, in the wilderness, when they built sheepfolds, pens, they actually just put a bunch of rock up. And every now and then they would build it at the crevice of this rock face. And there might be a cave there. And in there, as you see in this picture, there's this narrow opening. And in all sheepfolds, especially in the wilderness, you will never find a door or a gate the way we think of it. So what is Jesus saying? What is he alluding to? And I want you just to keep this image in your mind, because you're going to see how Jesus resolves this. I am the gate. I am the door. There's such beautiful imagery here. They would put up like thorns and thistles on top of the sheet on the wall so that nobody could get in. And the only access and only way in was right here, right here. This was it. And Jesus is saying, I am the door. I am the gate. All who came before me, all who came before me, thieves and robbers and strangers, they're wolves. All other systems of all other things where you think you're good enough that you got to somehow climb that mountain, find the right path and always get to God and all this kind of stuff. You got to understand what Jesus is saying here is a very difficult statement. Because what he's saying is basically looking at Judaism, he's going, this, all of what you thought was, these are thieves and they're robbers. Their intentions is to steal and to kill and to destroy your life. I mean, this metaphor was landing because they knew the only way for thieves to actually steal the sheep was to actually kill them. Because sheep are stubborn little creatures, and if a thief were to get over the wall and come into the sheep pen, they run from a stranger's voice. They flee from a stranger. That's reality. So for the only way for that thief to get the sheep is to grab it and to slit its throat and then to throw it over the fence. That's what Jesus is saying about all other things that claim a way to God. Brandon, but isn't it arrogant to say that Jesus is the only way? Like, isn't it arrogant to say that, like, this is it? We're all other people. You're telling me that, like, this one stands apart and all the other religions are different, all this kind of stuff. Like, Jesus is being exclusive. How can you say that? Isn't that arrogant? I'm going to say no, it's not. Because we got to look at the intentions of what Jesus is trying to say. He's like, I have come so that you may have life. I have come so you might see the Father's heart. I have come because you don't realize you're walking on the edge of a cliff about to jump into a life forever separated from God, which we call hell. You don't know that I have come to save you, to rescue you. I'm going to say it's a little bit arrogant to say that Christianity is the only religion that claims exclusivity. Folks, listen, all religions are exclusive. There is not one belief system in existence that isn't exclusive. Why is it that Christianity gets hit on that? They all claim that. Well, are all religions fundamentally the same? Not even close. Not even close, because all the religions paint this picture of trying to go up a mountain to reach something. And how do we get up that mountain? Well, we just got to be good. Good people will get to heaven. Okay, that's great. Well, you know who you just excluded in that statement? Bad people. Okay, well, who's bad and who's the standard for bad? Is my bad bad or is your bad bad? What about those who abuse and molest kids? Are they good or are they bad? Well, I don't know. You see the problem. All of them have a list. They all claim exclusivity at some level. Jesus, on the other hand, says, listen, it's not about what you can do to get there. And no, not all paths lead to me, because most paths apart from me actually lead away from me. I came down from the mountain to where you're at because you can't do it. So I provided a way for you. This is a tough statement because people struggle with this. But it's all about the heart of God. Why did he come? Why did he die? Why did he resurrect?
We know these things are historically verifiable. We know that. So why does Christianity get hit so hard on this? I love what Timothy Keller says. He's one of my favorite authors. He wrote this: all religions are exclusive. All religions are exclusive. And that includes agnostic and atheist. It's all in there. But Christianity is the most inclusive exclusivity there is. Think about it. Christianity is the only inclusive, all are welcomed exclusivity there is, but there's only one way. So here's the list. God's list. Everybody is here. Bad. Everybody is here. You'll never be good enough. Everybody's here. You can never do good enough works to get to Jesus. Everybody is here. There's no exclusion to that. This is where we're at. Jesus came. I am the door. I am the door. If anyone would enter through me, they would come in and out and they would be saved. They would find good pasture. They would have life and freedom. All others. Look at the heart of God. Think about parenting, right? We want to protect our kids, so we tell them what's right and wrong because we love them. Yeah, but Dad, you're just not being fair. Oh, I'm telling you, that is our world right now. That is just not fair. You're right, it's not, but it's for your good. Someday you'll get it, right? You hope as a parent, you know? Jesus came out of love, out of grace, to go all other. They're thieves, they're robbers, they're wolves. They want to destroy you. The motivation or those who have inspired that, it comes from the enemy. It's Satan who's doing that. It's not flesh and blood, and he flat out hates you. So of course it makes sense to buy into the line of all religions are fundamentally the same. Because Jesus is going to be the great divider. I am the door. What do doors do? Doors separate. That's what they do. They create a distinction. There's a separation with a door. I get this. When I want a break from my kids, I go to my room. I shut the door and I lock it. And then I pretend that I don't hear them. And I pretend that there's not a little two-year-old jiggling the handle. I'm separating myself, right? It's like doors separate. That's what they do. They cause division. Jesus knows that. He understands that by making this claim, people are going to have a hard time with that. He knows that. And there's many people who followed Jesus that had to deal with the costly decision of following him. Many people have lost friends and families because of it. But Jesus has come for life. He wants us to be saved and to walk into this knowledge of who he is and freedom. But that's what a door does. It creates division. It separates. But it's open to all. And that leads us to the second thing. Doors force a decision. Will you go in or will you not? There was this door in my house growing up that terrified me. We had to pass it every day to get to our bedrooms. It was the door up to the attic. And it was this dark mahogany wood looking door. And it had like weird little scratches on it, which in itself was creepy. And the door handle had like a skeleton key, which, you know, growing up, if it has a skeleton keyhole, that's always scary. You know, because you're like, where, they don't make those keys anymore. What is that? And the door handle was like this iron that was like rust. It was just really creepy. And I would choose to not go by or open that door. Every day I would walk past it and be like, because I didn't know what was behind it. And so I constantly chose to not go through that door. It was a decision. Then one day I made a decision. I'm going to open up that door. I'm going to decide what is up there. And I opened up the door, and what I found was a wonderland of adventure up in the attic. I found my dad's 8-tracks. An 8-track player, like, what is that? I didn't even know what to do with it. I found so many things in my dad's stuff, and it was just great fun. But I had to make the decision to go through that door. You know, Jesus tells us in Revelations that he stands at the door. And we got to make a decision. That's what a door does. You have to decide, are you going to go in or out? Because that leads us to the other thing. Doors provide a way in and out. It provides access. Because we're all on this side, on this list, we're all here. There had to be a way to get there. And so God sent his son to create access into salvation. He created a way in and out, the way into salvation, and we're able to walk out into freedom because we are now led by a good shepherd. I'm going to say something, and it's going to sound really funny, but I want you to think about it. Salvation is not a human right. Salvation is not a human right. You are not entitled to it. You don't deserve it. It's not yours. As people, we sinned against a holy God, and we breached that. We sinned, so therefore God's wrath, which is just, is on us. It's not our right. We are condemned as sinners apart from Jesus. Salvation is not a human right. We have to understand that. It is a gift given to us by God. For Jesus to come as the Son of God who created the world and holds the universe in the palm of his hand, to come down in our form, who knew no sin, to become sin for us, says, listen, I am the way, and I know you're not going to like it, but listen, I'm providing you a way into salvation. It's an access point. It's an opportunity for a way in and a way out. It's not a human right. It shows so much of his heart. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to try to be good enough. Just receive it. Just walk through by faith. There's no other religion that gets anywhere close to that. Because of that, we're able to walk out in freedom. We're able to go in and go out and find good pasture. We're free from sin. We're free from condemnation. We're free from the guilt. We're free from striving to be good enough. We're free from all the worry and the anxiety. We have complete freedom because we realize we are loved unconditionally, and that love drives out all fear. We're able to walk into the world, into the wilderness, knowing we're being led by a good shepherd who will fend for us, who will protect us, who will always lead us to life. Doors provide security, right? If you come to my house, I hope you realize that everything on the other side of that door belongs to me. So don't take it. Right? It provides security. It provides a concept of ownership. So when you enter the sheepfold, you got to think about it. When you're part of Jesus' sheepfold, he's the door. He's providing a level of security because he goes, everything in here is mine. These are my sons and daughters. You don't mess with my children. You mess with my children, buddy. Like it's that feel. The door is providing security. He guards, he protects what he values, and he values you. He sees you worth dying for. It doesn't matter if you're white, black, red. It doesn't matter what race you are. It doesn't matter your economic status. It doesn't matter if you're a prostitute or if you're a priest. You're all the same in God's eyes because you're created in the image of God, and you can only come to Jesus or God through Jesus Christ alone, not by anything you can do. And once you're in there, listen, he paid for you with his blood. That was the price he paid. He bought you with his blood. He redeemed you. He bought you back. That tells me Jesus is going to protect what he paid for. Why do you think we get insurance? Because we want to protect what we treasure. We want to protect our investments. We want to protect what we paid for. And I'm not saying Jesus is our insurance, but what I am saying is Jesus bought you with his blood. And he's not going to let things mess with you. Yeah, but what about things happen to people and bad things happen to people and people get sick and all these types of things? Yes, yes, yes. Let's keep eternity in mind. Not to downplay that or to minimize that, because we're going to see the beauty and nurturing heart of the shepherd in just a moment. But this life is just it's just a, whatever that is. It's a vapor. It's a mist. It's eternal. We're eternally secure. You come to my house and you try to mess with my kids, or you try to mess with my wife. Well, I'm not going to stop short of protecting them. You got to see that's how Jesus sees you. I am the door. And this door is unlike any other door. And I want to share with you how these two metaphors play off of each other now, because this is absolutely beautiful. Not only does the shepherd call out the sheep by voice, but with his voice one by one, but as he's returning from pasturing the flock in the wilderness, and he's leading them back into the sheepfold, the narrow gate, the narrow door was intentional because he didn't want the flock to all run in. Because what the shepherd does is he knows each sheep by name. He takes his rod, and as the flock is coming in, he drops his rod down, and the sheep would come, and he would inspect that sheep. He would look it over from head to toe, checking to see, is there any limps? Are there any bruises? Is there cut? Is the sheep hungry? Is it thirsty? He's inspecting it because he purposely and lovingly cares for each sheep. Come on, Fluffy. Okay, check, check, check. Okay, then he lifts up his rod, that sheep goes in, he drops his rod, the next sheep comes up, and he inspects that sheep. Every single one gets that type of care and nurturing by the shepherd at the door. Listen, some of you this morning, you just maybe simply just need to hear that. Does God notice my problems? Does God notice my pain? Does God notice my anxiety? Does God notice my worry? Does God notice that I'm struggling as a parent? Does God notice that my marriage is on the fringe? Does God notice I'm trying to quit these addictions, but I can't quit? Yes, he notices. He's your good shepherd, and as you come into the fold, he's inspecting each and every one of you. Listen to his voice. He will lead you in and out into freedom. You just got to respond to his voice. He cares for you. He knows you by name, and he sees every aspect of you. That is love. Tell me another religion that has anything close to that. I love this part. He can only lead you to life. Now, here's the other part I want us to visualize. Count with me, if you would, in verse 11, 15, and 17, and 18, how many times Jesus says, lay down my life. Verse 11, I am the good shepherd, and the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Verse 15, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. 2, verse 17 and 18, for this reason, the Father loves me, because I lay down my life, and I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay down my life of my own accord, and I have authority to lay it down, and I have the authority to take it up. 5 times he says, lay it down. Fascinating. Now, if you've been in the church world or following Jesus for a while, you're making the connection that when he says, lay down his life, he's talking about how he gave himself up to be crucified, to have his body broken and his blood shed on our behalf, which is absolutely true. But you can't miss the other part of this metaphor. Jesus said, I am the door. And Jesus said, I am the good shepherd. So after the shepherd led each sheep in one by one, inspecting each sheep with the most tender, loving care, and after all the sheep are in the fold, and after he's calmed them down and settled them down and got them ready for bed, for sleep, the shepherd would take his outer garment, wrap it around himself, and then literally lay down as the gate. He laid down his life. You want these sheep? Come on. I dare you. He himself lays down as the gate because he knows what's out there. He knows what's out in the world. He knows what's out there in the darkness, in the Tennessee nights. He knows what's out there that he wants to get you and to kill you. He's protecting you. He's purposely laying down his life as the good shepherd. This, my friends, is the most beautiful image. I am the door. I lay down my life for the sheep. He literally places himself right there. It's as if he's drawing this line. It's like, this line and no further. You can't have them. They're mine. And we know in verse 16, he says, I got sheep of other folds and I'm out there to get them too. It's open to all. As Jesus lays down his life, he becomes the door. Do you hear Jesus calling you this morning? Do you hear his voice? You got to understand that when he makes a clear distinction between all other religions and all other things, he's not trying to be rude. He's not trying to be arrogant. He's not trying to be offensive. He's being loving. He came for you because you have ultimate value to him. You were worth it to him. He's the shepherd who's choosing to give his whole life for the protection and the care of the sheep. Maybe this morning, as we come to the communion table, maybe you've never seen Jesus this way, and maybe you're still out there wandering around in the wilderness. Listen, he will leave the 99 and go after you. He will do it. And he will not stop until he finds you, because that's his heart. He will keep trying to woo you out, but you still got to choose to respond to that. And maybe you've never walked through that door. Maybe this is the morning for you to come walk through the door and enter into salvation, to experience for the first time the freedom and the liberty that God offers you. Now, for some of you, beloved, who might be walking with the Lord and you've just strayed, if you're not under the leadership of the Good Shepherd, I want to tell you this, you're making yourself extremely vulnerable to the wolves. And make no mistake, they will get you. Hear his voice and come back. We want to use this time before we come to the table as an opportunity just to reflect on this, just to go, where am I at? And if you never believed in Jesus, Lord and Savior, I want to encourage you to let this time pass, the communion pass, because this is an opportunity for us to rehearse and remember the gospel. This is an opportunity for us to say, yes, I have chosen to believe and receive the broken body and the shed blood of Jesus on my behalf for the sins that I've committed, that now I'm washed white as snow because of him. I am justified and freed because of him. And if there's some of you in this room that just needs to deal with sin in your life, or maybe you just need some direction, or maybe, just maybe, you feel like God is not near you because of X, Y, and Z is happening in your life. Moms, some of you might feel like you're a bad mom because it's been hard. Maybe you had a hard week and son and daughter's just been driving you nuts, and you know you're not living up to the standard expectations you placed upon yourself. Listen, Jesus sees that, and he wants to love you in that and meet your needs there. Husbands and wives, if you feel like this week was a bad week, he knows that. Let him love you. Some of you are anxious or worrying about a financial situation, a health condition, whatever it is. Let him take that from you. He can only lead to life. Let's use this space as an opportunity to hear the voice of the Good Shepherd. So Father, we come to you through the blood of your Son, Jesus, and we're thankful for that. And we ask that you would lead us and guide us to life. We know that's what you will do. So Jesus, have your way in this space. Lord, if there are those in this room that are moving towards you in faith for the first time, God, would you meet them? And if there are those who are confessing sins and responding to you, God, I just pray that you would shower them with grace and love and mercy. So meet us here. In Christ's name, amen.